Barbarian Tribes of Rome. Everyday life of the Goths. Several early sources paint a picture of the Goths as being predominantly forest folk with very barbarian nomadic lifestyles. However, one invaluable document gives us a clear insight into what this ancient people actually did in their everyday life. One 4th century Gothic bishop of Greek descent, Wulfilla, underwent a massive task of translating the Bible from Greek to Gothic. For this task, he crafted an entirely new alphabet using Germanic runes and the Greek alphabet as a basis. Of course, some sources claim that this translation was more likely an effort of a whole team under Wulfilla's supervision. We pay close attention to the so-called Gothic Bible because Wulfilla described everyday events using contemporary terms. In other words, he used Gothic terminology to describe different jobs and occupations in biblical stories. Terminology that was without a doubt used by the Goths. Of course, these words come to us from the Visigothic lands, which means that the Ostrogoths and other tribes associated with the Goths might not have used the same terms, though we can't be certain of this. From Wulfilla's translation, we can ascertain that the Goths were avid farmers. They plowed many types of field called ochres and thorp with plows called hoha. They would use oxen or asu to pull the plows. They would link them with a yoke called a jacu. Some of these words, like alusa and jacus, clearly correspond to the modern English equivalent of ox and yoke, as both Gothic and English are Germanic languages in origin. The Visigoths sowed many different types of grain, or carn. Their fields contained wheat, haurus, rye, carno, barley, bazaran, and flax, or sayon, which they used to make linen, called lin. Word for these green crops was called atisk. A typical farmer used a gilth or a sickle during harvest, asans, and usually took place in summer. Carts or jagat took the reaped wheat from the threshing to a place called the threshing yard, gothrosk. After the threshing was done, the grain would be stored in banths or barns. Once there, the Gothic farmer would grind the grain using a circular handmill, a quinarth. It was then up to the baker to bake and raise the dough, digs, and make flatbread, halafs. However, based on contemporary sources, the Visigoths didn't yield a lot of grain from these agricultural practices. That's why they relied on importing Roman grain, at least during the time of the Emperor Valens in 366. Aside from agriculture, the Goths had some minor skills in gardening, but no source from that time tells us how efficient they were. Animal husbandry was also more likely practiced during the early Gothic times based on food remnants and scarce animal bones in Gothic graveyards. We can safely state that the Goths raised cows, sheep, poultry, horses, and donkeys. They would use the latter two for transportation and as beasts of burden. Sheep in particular were useful for their wool, which the Goths used for clothing. Cows yielded milk, while chickens had laid eggs. Both of these were essential food for the Goths next to meat. Aside from farmers and animal husbandmen, there was a whole slew of different professions in ancient Gothic lands. Some of them include blacksmith, or smitha, carpenters, timra, butchers, cilia, clothiers and fullers, wularis, fishermen, nuta, healers or doctors, lykis, and potters, kassia. Each of these trades was important for everyday life of a Goth. The blacksmith would work on weapons and iron tools. Interestingly, they also made a number of combs and fibula, or brooches, for fastening clothes. Carpenters would make wooden furniture using small hand axes. Both butchers and fishermen provided the Gothic village with food in their own separate ways. Fullers and clothiers worked on wool to make clothing, and naturally a healer was always necessary for the weak and the sick. Potters in particular are important for historians and archaeologists because it's thanks to them we have a whole host of Gothic artifacts that survive to this day. They would fashion different pots of various sizes, but also make oil lamps that were similar to Roman counterparts. Pots were mass-produced and more than likely exported to other lands in the region. Trade was a major part of Gothic life, and the Romans were by far the biggest trading partners if and when it was possible. The Romans would export wine and cooking oil to the Goths, as well as fine fabrics and jewelry. All of these items were highly valued by Gothic nobles and wealthy houses at the time. For example, Gothic men of wealth could drink wine in heavily adorned cups and goblets, and the women would wear elaborate jewelry made of silver and precious gems. Whenever a war would break out with the Romans, the Goths, trade would cease, and the Goths would suffer heavy shortages. It's no wonder that they always claimed free trade during the times of peace. While they did have raw materials, the material goods to trade, the Goths would often offer slaves as payment. Whenever there was a surplus of people, Gothic or non-Gothic, the Goths would go to the Danubian slave markets and sell them off to the Romans. Housing. Going over the Sitana de Mures sites, we can find fascinating finds that tell us about the houses of the early Goths. Two different types existed based on how they were built. The first one reminds us very much of early Anglo-Saxon dwellings, with the houses built with floors cut into the ground. These sunken huts are what archaeologists called pit houses, or Grubenhäuser in German. The singular form is Grubenhaus. The pit houses of the Goths were either rectangular or oval, sometimes even half oval. Normally they would be very small, covering between 5 and 16 square meters, or 54 to 172 square feet. The floors were just beaten earth, where the walls were made of wattle and daub, and the roofs made of rushes. Some of the dwellings of the Goths near the Black Sea even had stone floors. Each and every house had a hearth for heating during the winter months. The second type of house that the Goths would inhabit is called the surface house. In German, these homes are called Wollstallenhäuser, or Birnhäuser. The name perfectly explains their purpose. They contain two parts under one roof, living quarters for the family and an animal section. They also came in two different sizes. Small barn dwellings would measure 10 to 30 square meters, 107 to 323 square feet, whereas large ones would go up to anywhere between 68 and 120 square meters, 732 to 1,337 square feet. Both types of houses had plastered walls, timber framing, rushes as roofing material, beaten earth floors, and stone hearths. These differences in sizes and material are not there for nothing. Wealthier Gothic families could afford bigger, sturdier homes for themselves and their extended family. This was especially true with the Gothic nobles, who were either on good terms with the Romans or enjoyed a lot of wealth in the village for one reason or another. Now, as we get to art, it's unfortunate that the term Gothic art, as well as Gothic architecture, is related to a movement that happened centuries after the last Gothic kingdoms were long gone. We have barely any proper examples of how Gothic artists might have expressed themselves. However, there must have been some noteworthy level of skill. For example, if we look at the basic brooches, belt buckles, combs, personal jewelry, and pottery of the Sitana de Mures culture, we can see that the effort put into these pieces was not just to be useful, but also aesthetically pleasing. Possibly the most famous example of this is the Visigothic eagle-shaped fibula made of gold, bronze, meerschaum, glass, and gemstones in the 6th century. The eagle motif was a carryover from the Roman tradition, and people in the Balkans would continually use it well into the Middle Ages. One particular style of fashioning jewelry that the ancient Goths perfected was the polychrome style. They would use wrought cells and encrust gemstones into whatever gold object where they were making. This method continued into the Middle Ages in the Western Germanic Europe, as well as the Gothic kingdoms already formed. Like Gothic art, we know next to nothing about their written word, largely because ancient Goths didn't have a unified writing system. However, there are a few artifacts that scholars assume contain Gothic runic inscriptions. Three of them are seen as authentic Gothic writing before Christianization, one of which is the ring from Petrosa in Romania, and two are spearheads found in Germany and Ukraine. But with Christianity, the Goths did get a much-needed addition to their culture, a Gothic alphabet. During the 4th century, Wulfilla created a system of 27 letters that corresponded to the sounds in the Gothic language. His translation of the Bible was by all means a step in the right direction for the Christianization of the Goths, but more importantly, it opened the door for learning and literate monarchs. Aside from this translation, we don't have any other written works that use the Gothic alphabet, translated or original. Moreover, we don't even have the complete manuscript of the Gothic Bible. Instead, we have fragments that survive as 5 separate codices and a lead tablet containing some gospel verses. Goths and their legacy. The Goths overall did more to change the political and cultural landscape of Europe than most people between the 4th and the 8th centuries. It's no wonder that two massive moments in art and architecture are termed Gothic in their name. The Goths were incredibly adaptable. Through their conquests as well as their migrations, they embraced different elements of native cultures, but they also influenced others enough to become dominant culture in both Italy and the Iberian Peninsula. And since they were so close to both the Romans and the Byzantines, they can rightfully be seen as the successors of Rome in important aspects. Thanks to the Goths, Roman law remained in practice long after the city of Rome had fallen under Odoacer. And the transition between Rome and post-Roman Europe was made somewhat easier with Gothic kings at the peak of their power. One particular innovation that the Goths provided changed the entire course of warfare. While they started off as completely infantry-based armies, they became rather effective warriors on horseback. Even as far back as the Battle of Adrianople, the Gothic chieftain Fritigern would command the cavalry. Goths of both Eastern and Western varieties also responsible for a few more historic events that have since become legendary. It was the Goths who first sacked Rome, since the creation of the Roman Empire in 410. It was a series of Gothic kings who would decide on which emperor should sit on the Roman throne. It was largely a Gothic king that gave Attila the Hun his first major defeat, and another Gothic king would unite Spain for the first time in history and declare himself independent of the Byzantine Empire. Yet another Gothic king was one who would kill the man who destroyed the Western Roman Empire and claim the territory for himself, further expanding his kingdom and effectively ruling all the Goths, and nearly all of the Iberian and Italian Mediterranean coast. It was a Gothic priest who invented a whole new alphabet, translated the Bible into Gothic, giving us some insight in the old Germanic languages of the time. It was a Gothic queen that maintained the stability of Italy even after the death of her legendary husband. And it's the two Gothic dynasties that are responsible for shaping much of European political, ecclesiastical, and social life with their blend of Rome and Gothic customs. History of the late 19th and early 20th century has not been kind to the Goths. Their association with the National Socialist German Workers' Party of Germany, the Nazis, had left a bad taste in the mouth of many historians, and sadly, terms such as Gothic and Aryan can make everyday people cringe even today because of what connotations they might have had. But historically speaking, the Goths of the East and the West have contributed far more and in far more flattering manner to our collective memory than anything the Nazi regime ever did. As such, we have to approach the Gothic history scientifically, but not without inquisitive curiosity. For people like the Goths, with their fascinating past, tumultuous kingdoms, and fierce legendary kings, can only leave you wanting to know a lot more. The sources for this include The Germanic People, Their Origins, Expansion, and Culture by Owen. The Barbarian West, 400 to 1000 AD by Wallace Hadrill. History of the Barbarian Celts, Vandals, Sarmatians, Scythians, Goths, Huns, and Anglo-Saxons. And Attila and the Nomadic Hordes by Nicole and McBride. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.